Hi, everybody, and welcome to the RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 3 recap here on Reality TV Wrap-Ups. My name is Mike Bloom, as always, covering now the back half, the big back half, if we're drinking some Kennedy soup, of Season 3 of RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 3. I don't know why that sounded so redundant, but of course I am joined by my lovely panel of people. First, someone who would definitely write in his diary about how he met all of the Brenchel family on last night's Big Brother podcast, Brent Wolgamott. Brent, how are you doing?
Hey, Mike, I know why it's redundant. Because it was!
And lastly, achoo. Oh, no, I was just reaching for the soup. I didn't mean to sneeze. It's Liana Boris. That's a horrible introduction.
That's okay. I know you're just doing your partially sedated twink from Brooklyn impression, I'll give you that one.
That's what I was gonna say, and I was about to say the one other one I had in my head was the only person I know who can beat a partially sedated twink from Brooklyn in a lip sync.
Oh my goodness, that was great. Oh no. Thank you so much for pulling that, Liana. I actually had forgotten about that, and it was something where I'm like, oh my god, I need to bring that up because it's so funny. And then it's totally went out of my head. So I'm glad it lives in your head. Your head is good.
Yes.
How is your head?
Oh my gosh, no complaints.
There we go. Thank you. Give Chi-Chi those lessons. All right, let's talk about this episode of RuPaul's Drag Race. It is the design challenge. It was the ball challenge. But was it the ball challenge? We'll talk about it. But a little dramatic. Definitely, I would say an unexpected outcome at the outset. I would definitely say a bounce back from Snatch Game, though I don't know how much that's saying specifically. Liana, what did you think about this episode?
I don't know. Call me an old school RuPaul's Drag Race fan, but I always love the sewing challenges. This one, though, I was a little confused by, considering the whole can thing really threw me for a loop, because I was like, okay, so they're going to have to design an outfit that looks like a Campbell's soup can. And then I thought they were going to have to design a soup can sort of like in, was it an All-Stars 2 where they had or was it season 5 where they had to design a product?
Both technically, because season 5 was the fragrance and All-Stars 2 was just the QVC pick whatever product you want to.
Right. So that's what I thought it was. Then they had to wear the soup can. So eventually it all came around, but I was very confused on the outset by this.
Yeah, I agree with Liana. I didn't understand what was going on. I thought they were making an outfit inspired by soup cans.
Yeah,
and then
right.
I also saw a soup can that was like sitting in the corner, I thought, or maybe this is my own delusion from my lack of sleep. Like, I thought I saw a soup can sitting in the corner that was like a fourth of the size of the eventual soup cans that they wore. And I'm like, are they going to carry them down the runway? Like, here's me and here's my soup that I'm carrying. I wasn't sure what was going on here. Having said that, once it got on the runway, I thought it was very, very fun. Wasn't sure exactly how they came up with these computer generated things. Like, I'm like, how much were the queens a part of that? How much was being done for them? Was it all their idea? They were just placing words in different places. But I like the results. It was very fun. And I agree with Liana that I call this the Project Runway Challenge, because it's the, you know, make
it work.
Fabulousness out of shit. You know, anything that looks terrible, you can turn it into something fun and draggy. And I feel like they accomplished that for the most part.
Well, let's jump into it. And before we get to the runway, we start with a little bit of post-elimination stuff. Obviously not as drama rampant as it was the past two episodes, because Chi-Chi has a very nice mirror message about remember to keep it fair. We do have a bit of back and forth between Trixie and Shangela, where Trixie talks about how she'll PayPal Trixie, that Trixie should PayPal Shangela $10,000. I don't know if Shangela got it, considering she just talked about how she won $5,000, so she doesn't necessarily need it, but I appreciated the reference nonetheless. And we begin the first of many times we cut to Benda La Creme, who is a little grousing about the fact that it's just becoming so hard to eliminate the queens. And look, I love me some Benda La Creme, but to me, Benda La Creme was screaming first world drag race problems this entire episode.
Oh my God.
It sucks that I'm doing so well that I have to eliminate people. And she's been doing spectacularly. And I would say even this episode was not a bad performance overall whatsoever. But and maybe this is an editing thing. I don't know. I just, speaking of redundancy, I just found we didn't need to keep necessarily going back to that. Well, we sort of got it by the third time it cut to Kennedy rolling both of those chameleon eyes after hearing Ben sort of talk about how hard it was for her to eliminate the other queens.
Yeah, it started to feel like they were trying to foreshadow something, but I never got any payoff at the end of the episode. So I don't know what that was about. I mean, at the you saw there with Ben and Kennedy talking about Kennedy was throwing some shade at Ben about how he, you know, Ben acted on the runway in response to some of the judges' criticism. And all throughout the episode, I felt like that I wasn't really sure where Ben was coming from. The only thing I can say is that it feels like he really wants to let us know that, you know, heavy is the head that wears the crown. And he's just all been out of shape about the fact that he's had to eliminate so many people or at least pick lipstick, which I don't really understand what the big deal is. Like, and then he's so in his head. This is the one thing I think that Kennedy came up as a bitch for most of this episode. She definitely had bitch face on. Let's be real. But
to be fair, Kennedy, we figured this out a couple episodes ago that's pretty much Kennedy's face though. So
I know. Yes, that's true. But the one thing she was right about was Ben was so in his head throughout this episode.
So I was trying to understand that too from a storyline perspective, and that's what I think it was. I think it was supposed to set up that Ben de la Creme was in her own head, and then that's maybe why, because especially that conversation that they had at the end where I think it was Kennedy and Ben de la Creme, mm-hmm. where, you know, it set up that conversation about, yeah, I'm tired, you know, because I've been doing all these things. And so I think that was sort of supposed to be related to it, but I totally thought this was going to be a situation of, okay, all the queens that we think are in the bottom or, you know, would have been the sort of easy eliminations are gone. And so now we're going to have some sort of dramatic, you know, acts at the end. So I thought, I was like, oh my gosh, what if Ben de la Creme gets cut or Shanji gets cut? And then when Shanji was in the bottom, I was like, oh my gosh. But then of course, you know, that didn't happen. And Aja, who had done well throughout the competition, so it was really sad to see her go, but it wasn't the same impact I think that I was hoping for based on that whole monologue that Ben de la Creme went on.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say it's exactly akin to what happened last episode where we got this entire Shangela versus Trixie note saga that ended up not really becoming anything, because that sort of carried over into this episode proper and sort of tied into when Trixie was on the top and Shangela was on the bottom. And we can debate what that decision may have been. We'll find out next week. That being said, I wonder if it's going to be a similar type of thing like you guys are talking about, where this is leading into something more direct, where now Ben might start just spiraling down by getting further and further in her head now that she's sort of built up this resume of wins. Maybe this comment that Ross said that's going to resonate with her of, we expect you to do 120 and you just gave us 100, is going to be something that's really going to lead her into a downward spiral, which would be very, very unfortunate. But we'll put a nice bobby pin in that.
Well, wait, so 2 points, though. So first of all, I do think that the Shangela Trixie had the element of payoff when we thought, you know, that Shangela might eliminate Trixie because of all the things that she was saying about this queen has had a career outside the show and all of that. So I think that sort of, you know, I know that it carried on, but it did have a little bit of a bow, at least at the end of last episode. And then as far as the Ben de la Creme sort of fall from grace kind of thing, I would actually, as much as I love Ben de la Creme and I want her to do well, that would be an exciting, just from a story perspective, of sort of watching her not do well. But that's really sad and morbid, so maybe I won't talk about that.
Very Andy Warhol of you, Liana, which is perfect to segue into this challenge. Rue comes in full Warhol drag to give, wait a minute, is this a mini challenge in New School RuPaul's Drag Race? Brent, this is unheard of. I can't believe that we actually have a mini challenge.
A mini challenge in an hour episode. That was what I could not believe. I was used to the mini challenges in like the hour and a half episodes, but I've never was expecting something in an hour episode. And it was very, very fun. Anytime RuPaul says the words quick drag, I get wet instantly. I don't know about you, Liana, but I am so into quick drag. I mean, I've never heard of the phrase quick drag before I started watching RuPaul's Drag Race. And now that I have, I'm like, I live for like what these queens do. Like some of them just can't stand not looking like a woman when they go on the runway. You know what I mean? And others kind of live for the skag drag of it all. You know what I'm talking about?
Actually, quick drag is what I do every morning when I get ready.
Liana, Boris, you need to get into quick drag.
Yeah, just like, all right, mascara, foundation, we're good. I was so excited. I was so excited for a mini challenge. I was confused at first because I thought we were going to just, I guess maybe my thing this whole episode was I was confused, but it was, I thought we were actually going to go right to the ball. And then, yeah, when RuPaul said quick drag, I was like, oh my gosh, yes. I was so excited. Finally, a mini challenge. You know, even though really, you know, what, like, what really came of it?
Nothing. No, okay, let's be clear. Nothing came of it. Okay. Yeah. Did Aja look really, really good? Okay. Yes. But that was not quick drag. That was sort of real drag. Okay. She really got a lot done in 15 minutes or however long they gave her. And then she comes out looking like a goddamn supermodel and takes a picture. And RuPaul's like, congratulations, you're the winner. So no, it wasn't a lot of anything.
But that's what I love about the mini challenges, that for the very much most part, they're not anything. It's do a sexy pose with a leaf blower in your face. Put a bunch of put a bunch of scotch tape on your face and film an intro to The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. I just love the mini challenges so much. I think their chintziness was really what got me into the show as I was progressively watching it. And I agree, Brendan, it was weird to see it in an hour-long episode, just because now I'm sort of saying, like, hey, you could do this. It took what? 3 minutes of a segment overall. I would love to see more of this, especially with season 10 having now apparently all 90-minute episodes. I feel like they have no excuse.
Yes. And I also, we demand.
Yes. We demand that Brett soup his pants every single week on the season 10 after watching these mini challenges.
Just flooded his basement.
Every week it's like, okay, for Brent, welcome on out there. We're going to get into quick drag. You know, I'm like, oh my God.
If it becomes a hashtag, what's going to happen, Brent? We might lose you. I don't know if you can make it. I'm going to give you four episodes.
Quick drag.
It's just some of them look so terrible. Like, some of them haven't even shaved. Like, they're sitting there with facial hair and they're getting into quick drag. It gives me life.
Oh my God. Kennedy was the best. She looked like a weird cross between like a Kardashian and the girl from The Ring on Ambien or something, like the way her eyes and like mouth were weirdly open. Oh, it was beautiful.
And I'm like Jaden Dior Fierce, where Jaden Dior was like, you know what? She's living for her gig, so I'm living for her. That's exactly what was happening with me and Kennedy. Like, I thought she looked a mess, but you could tell that Kennedy thought she looked fabulous.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, I don't think you look fabulous, but I can tell you do, so I'm living for you, girl. Go on, girl, go.
She looked like the girl in Woodstock, but like in the way, way back of Woodstock, where like nobody's letting them in their tent. Like, she's sleeping outside the yurt in the mud, but she's okay with it. But then I think it was Aja who went, like, directly after her, right? And like you said, she's, like, dressed to the nines, this Dita Fonte's hair and the perfectly smudged mascara. It was so much fun.
And I love photographer Rue, yes. I have to say, because Rue is so fun with all the little poses that he is making you do. Like, could you stick your neck out here? Could you give us more of that look? Yes, that you can tell he's just living for this moment on the show.
Yeah, I love when he was talking to Kennedy and saying, like, show me your top teeth, but don't show them like you're going to kill me.
Oh, it's so funny. And then also the fact that Aja won a year of hamburgers, which didn't Sasha Velour on last season win hamburgers despite being a vegetarian, and then like shampoo or something despite having no hair?
Yeah, Sasha's two wins in RuPaul's Drag Race season 9 were a year's worth of hamburger Marys, and I think it was either like shampoo or just wigs, and Sasha is a bald queen. So unfortunately, the irony, there's no ironic wins here with Aja. Maybe it'd be like, I don't know, a photo session with Valentina might be the most ironic one here for Aja. I am a little sad. Right. I feel like sometimes the mini challenges do give out sort of quote unquote advantages. I don't know exactly what that would entail for Aja, but if anything, this was a really silly, fun thing to throw in the middle. I also liked the fact that they were all pretty much topless, except for some reason, Shangela, who got like a full body shot for her pop art photo.
Right.
It's because that booty, she'd been drinking Kennedy's soup.
Oh boy. Let's talk about the soup. Not Joel McHale's head probably perked up when we
right?
said that statement.
That's exactly what I thought. Oh my God, we're so dated. Oh my God.
I miss that show.
He probably wets his pants every time the soup is mentioned. Let's be honest here. So the maxi challenge is to create two Warhol inspired looks from scratch. Though again, we talked about this. I'm going to put like a question mark on the end of that, because was it really two looks, or was it one look and one clip art frenzy that you put on a soup can? I'm not entirely sure. First off, I would love to hear from any of you. Are you, I mean, I don't know if any of us are as big Andy Warhol fans as Rue, but you know, are you knowledgeable in the ways of Warhol and his diaries?
I literally, I'll probably get my gay card taken back for this because I don't know much about Andy Warhol at all. I'm like Aja with like the wrong references and I don't know. I know it was something about 15 Minutes of Fame. I know that that's definitely Andy Warhol and Girl Bye to that. So that's all I know.
I know about his art and that's only because of my mother.
Did your mother?
But nothing else.
She educated you in the ways of Warhol?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it was just because we could only afford Campbell suit cans growing up, and so she was really pushing that, but I don't know.
Is that the reason why she hung up all the Campbell suit pictures, and she's like, oh, I need to figure out a rationale for this. I guess I'll just buy it for her.
Well, it was actually just the wrappers that she took off of the cans and then hung them up as art, so.
Anything could be art.
That's a joke.
Just ask Bob the Drag Queen. All right, let's get into this. So we have a design challenge here, so they need to create a supermodel look, which is essentially to design a can and a concept that they will use to market themselves. And then they need to do Disco Queen Couture, inspired by Studio 54. I was a little confused at first. This is me taking Paige Avellana's book, I guess, for this episode. When Ruth says, for example, when Bianca Jagger enters Studio 54, she rode a white horse. And I was like, okay, that's an odd example. Are you encouraging them to do that? But I guess the horse makes sense when we actually see it come out of the runway, I suppose. None of us are that knowledgeable that we would understand it if somebody just got off a white horse without any sort of explanation, Brent.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I saw them going out of commercial, or they were going to commercial, rather, and they were showing, you know, previews of upcoming scenes. And I think it was Trixie who was getting off the horse, but they showed it so fast that I literally was like, did Trixie somehow get a horse into here or something? Like, what's going on? How did this happen? And then I saw, no, it's a prop that literally all six of them are using.
Yeah, I thought the exact same thing. And I thought, oh my gosh, how good would it be if one of the queens decided to get some sort of prop white horse or, you know, like somehow work in that reference? Oh no, turns out, you know, that was staged.
You know, if Thorgy Thor was in this competition, she'd be like, they got a white horse for Ben de la Creme. I got a little pony that a kid would ride. This is ridiculous.
It was a little Sebastian.
Shenanigans.
Shenanigans. All right, let's start getting into this challenge, specifically the preparation for the challenge, because there's a lot of fun things to talk about here. First, big episode for Bibi Zahara-Binet. Starting a bit rough, though, I would say. I don't know. I was personally convinced from the edit that this was going to be a rough week for Bibi, especially when she starts off and she starts giving her pitch to the queens of her own soup called Achu, which is very spicy, and then apparently proceeded to go into, like, BuzzFeed Tasty-esque directions as to how to make Achu soup. Liana, did you feel the same way as I did about how Bibi was going to fare based on this segment?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be the same thing, especially because the Aja candy soup, you know, thing had just happened right before. I was like, oh, Aja's in trouble. And then, you know, Baby did hers and was like, achu. Which, first of all, when something is, it was spicy, right? And I was like, do you sneeze when you eat spicy food? Is that a thing?
I mean, I guess it causes your mucous membranes to run, right? So I guess there's something coming out of your nose. But I've never sneezed when I haven't eaten many, you know, ghost peppers in my life. But I would imagine it doesn't necessarily make you violently sneeze.
Yeah, I feel like you sweat and maybe your nose does run, but you don't really sneeze. Although I did like Shangela doing the soup, which reminded me that would be the soup that those little green things from the Mucinex commercials would make. You know what I'm talking about? You know, those little like weird looking. Yeah, that would be the soup. So, I thought she was in trouble.
Well, I thought that Bibi was going to be okay because, unlike Aja, Bibi did not get the, you know, famous sound effects on RuPaul's Drag Race where somebody is up to a bad idea.
Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, and you're like, oh, okay, yeah, you're definitely in trouble here. So Aja got that and Bibi didn't, from what I could tell. And I thought that maybe Bibi was just an idea that needed to be massaged a little bit. So I wasn't really worried for her. Plus the fact that I continually think that she's the mole and I don't really think she could ever be eliminated in the first place. And I feel like this challenge even more so lends itself to the idea that she's the mole because, I'm sorry, I had problems with Bibi's look. in this challenge. Maybe y'all didn't, but I definitely did. But overall, I thought that it was nice of Aja to help out BB with the sewing of the dress, yeah. insofar as I could tell how much she was helping her, but that didn't really come up on the runway, sis, so you might have some problems. I don't know.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Before we do, though, I just want to say, I did like Trixie's confessional here off of Achu about, like, we're not on the soup. Stop going into the list of ingredients that you're doing. I actually feel like, after a bit of a rut for Trixie, especially last episode, I feel like between confessionals and everything going on the stage, I feel like this was a home run of an episode for Trixie. I absolutely loved her this episode, and I'm sure we'll get more into that. But let's talk about what you were saying, Brent, because we have not one, not two, but three queens who do not know how to sew in this final six. Brent, I know you go all in on the newbie queens for not knowing how to sew at this stage of Drag Race herstory. Are we more forgiving on All-Stars, considering that they have made a career out of it despite not knowing how to sew?
I'm more forgiving if you know how to make it work. If you're not somebody who's going to come on RuPaul's Drag Race and be like, well, I don't really know how to do this, guys. I need some help. Can somebody help me? Like, at least Ben was like, you know what? Hot glue and staples, I'm good. That's all I need to do. I know how to work it. I know how to make myself look good. I know my body. If you're somebody like that who isn't necessarily best friends with the sewing machine, but you know how to make your drag look great. I think it was like Alaska at the end of season 5 who was in that cotton candy, gorgeous, whatever she wore on the runway thing during the candy ball. But she said after she got off the runway that the outfit literally disintegrated because it was barely holding on just enough for the runway. And I feel like that's all you need to do. Just make an outfit that's good enough for the runway that can hide from the judges. And then who cares after that? Because no one's ever going to see it again.
Well, I think that's the thing, is it's all about crafting an outfit. Yes. So whether or not you glue it or sew it, you know, obviously, I think that if you can sew and you can make a creation that is so good, like, you know, like Trixie's, for example, you know, that can sometimes result in a higher quality outfit. But I mean, like, even Dayla, who won her original crafting sewing challenge thing by hot gluing, even this one, this outfit, you know, I thought looked good. Like, I wouldn't have been able to tell that she didn't know how to sew.
Yes, which you can't say about some other outfits. One of them is perpetrated by the one and only Shangela, who we talked about this even in our preview. If there is one Achilles heel that even she is vocal about, it is not knowing how to sew. She said that before the show, she took a good amount of sewing classes, apparently over the course of 2 months. But it appears, Liana, that Bertha is at it again. Though maybe this time it's not particularly Bertha's fault, but the mood fabric that Shangela decided to pick for her dress.
I liked your comment about, I took the sewing classes, but I needed fabric choosing classes. Although Dayla coming in with her lampshade comment, oh my gosh, I was just dying about how, does anybody have a lampshade we can give her? as a callback to, it was season 3, right? The Christmas episode,
yes,
where they had
yes.
to make, like, that very first episode. Ugh,
yes.
God, that outfit was bad too.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, we'll talk about it when we get to the runway. Did she take sewing classes? Was she paying attention? Did she fail the sewing classes? I don't know. Potentially.
Yeah, I don't even know why she bothered. Why not just get a hot glue and staples and make it work, girl? Like, that's all you need to do. It's drag. You're on a runway. They're evaluating you. It's not like you're going to... It doesn't have to be functional. It just has to be theatrical.
Well, and it only has to stay together for however long they're on the runway, right?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I also am wondering what a fabric picking class would look like. Like, can you imagine, like, a community college being like, well, cotton is machine washable, so I would say you might want to choose that if you're making an outfit. And just, I don't know what the test would be, but I feel like Shangela needs to enroll in that class ASAP. We go to the next day here, and we get another moment from Aja, who is very, very confident in this challenge, very vocally so, I would say. And definitely pride cometh before a fall, unfortunately, with Miss Aja. But on the other side of the workroom, as the queens are putting their makeup on, Ben talks once again about how she feels like she's going to try to figure out a system to math Drag Race, essentially, and figure out a way where she can systematically eliminate people in a fair way. And this is where Kennedy, she's been vocal in the confessionals before, but I feel like this is the first time that she's actually vocal about, get out of your head. Maybe you can't handle the responsibility. You should just eliminate someone based on who you want to go. Brent, you were mentioning this before. What did you think about Kennedy's attitude overall this episode?
Man, Kennedy Davenport is just my kind of drag queen, y'all. I mean, seriously, I was so with her on this. I can't understand what Ben is trying to get at. I don't know if Ben is trying to assuage his own guilt over the people that he has maybe eliminated or tried to eliminate in the decisions that have come because of his winning. I also couldn't understand, maybe he's trying to rationalize the fact that he's going to have to eliminate some of his people who have become really good friends of his, and he wants it to be all fair. Or is he trying to rationalize the fact that he feels like eventually he's going to end up in the bottom two, and he wants to make it in an objective way where no matter how you look at the cards, he can't lose. Like that's, I felt like it was probably more the last one. Like he was trying to come up with a way that they all basically agreed on, where it was an objective look at what's happened. And no matter how you look at Ben de la Creme's career on Drag Race thus far for RuPaul's Drag Race All-Stars 3, there's no way you can come up with any system where he deserves to be eliminated over anybody else, because he's been in the top every single flipping time. Even this time, in the top, I think was number three based on what I was hearing from the judges' critiques, but was not in the top two. Still an amazing flipping run on Drag Race.
Oh, I completely co-sign that. I mean, I think that it's definitely a situation where Dayla is maybe not feeling so good about what, you know, what she put together, and is just sort of doing this thing where, I mean, yeah, there's, if you look at it mathematically, and Lord knows as a scientist, I'm a fan of math, that she would definitely not be in the bottom. I think I saw this on Reddit last week before this challenge, but somebody actually did that where they assigned point values to either winning, being in the top, being in the bottom, being safe and being in the bottom. And Dayla was way ahead of everybody else. And so, right.
Yeah, because she's won every challenge totally so
sense.
Far.
Well, yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it totally makes sense. I mean, I loved Kennedy in that moment though, too, because it did feel like first world Drag Race problems, especially because you hadn't even won yet, you know?
Right.
Like,
exactly.
Shut up, girl.
Exactly. That's what I had a problem with. That and the fact that I was so with Kennedy on this. You know what? It's a gut thing. I'm so glad that Kennedy has stuck to her guns the entire time, has not really played the game with these queens. I mean, she's playing with Ben, knowing that Ben can win at any given time, and choose to eliminate Kennedy, which I think at one point Ben had the power to do. I can't remember if Kennedy was up for elimination.
She was during the against Thorgy.
Right, right, exactly. But I couldn't remember if Ben had won that or not. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But yeah, Ben's definitely had to look at the lipstick and decide whether or not to pull Kennedy Davenport's name. Like I said, Kennedy's all about gut and feel. How do I feel about you as a person? I love the fact that Kennedy was willing to say, you know what? It's not all about the challenges. That's where Ben was like, what? You know, because that's Ben's worst nightmare, is that it's not about the challenges. Because if it's not about the challenges, then all of a sudden Ben is vulnerable and he can't have that. So he's trying to control everything. And you know how it is, Mike, with the bird. You know, when you try to squeeze it too tight, you know what happens?
It pops.
Yes, exactly. It dies. It dies, girl. It dies.
I like that you gave an you were like, oh, it pops.
I'm much more visceral. I think the other thing as well is that I do think they actually both have two very different ways of thinking it, just from a base standard, because we also know that Kennedy comes from the pageant circuit, where it is extremely competitive, and it's all about win, 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 no matter what. And we see this sort of come in later on in the episode, where she basically says, like, listen, if you don't want to make the decision, then you shouldn't win. I feel like one of the reasons why Kennedy doesn't give an F about sending people home is because she's says, you know what, I earned it. This is my competition to win. So it doesn't matter how I affect anyone else.
Yes, exactly. That's it, Liana. It's the fact that, you know what, this is she's got a job to do. Kennedy Davenport is just so freaking no nonsense. She's like, you know what? This Rue has given us this responsibility. If you win the challenge, you got to eliminate somebody. Period. Point blank. You know, end of story. You got to do it. And Ben's just boo-hooing about it. And then this is like the second week in a row that Ben is boo-hooed about the fact that he has to eliminate somebody. And how awful does that make him feel? And it's just so tacky.
Ugh. Hit her.
Yes.
That was my favorite line from Trixie, where Trixie's like just in the bathroom, background, blah.
Back
just,
rolls.
Back rolls. And just yells, hit her.
Well, let's get into the main challenge itself between the superstar and the disco queen couture. We have two guest judges this episode, Pretty Little Liars' Shay Mitchell and Titus Burgess from Broadway and Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Liana, did you have any overall thoughts about these two guest judges?
So I'm not familiar, I don't watch Pretty Little Liars, so I was unfamiliar with Shay, but I was excited to see Titus, although I was hoping for a little more, from him. I don't know if I think I just had high expectations. I thought that Shay gave actually fairly solid feedback and seemed to be, you know, on the same page as all of the other judges. So that was pretty interesting to see.
Yeah. I didn't know who the hell these two people were. I really didn't. I was like, even Titus Burgess. I know Titus Burgess, but only because he was on The Match Game with Alec Baldwin. And I was like, yeah, I don't. Other than that, I'm not sure. So, yeah, they were a snooze for the most part. I agree with Liana that Shay, the woman, gave some pretty valid criticism of some of the drag looks that were on the runway and was generally pretty helpful and was obviously a fan. So I appreciate that. But as far as fun to be had, not really much of it.
Well, I personally like them both. I think they were, if we're going above the Jeffrey Boyer Chapman 1.0 line of like replacement level Drag Race guest judge, they would definitely be above it, in my opinion. Maybe it's just because I really like both of them. I love Titus's initial exchange with Rue when Rue's like, oh, you want to have some Pinot Noir for breakfast? Oh, and you're going to have some black dick? For breakfast. It's just, that was really good. And what I will say, unfortunately, I think some of their possibilities in terms of commentary was curtailed a bit by the rampant amount of voiceover that was going on that I don't think any of us had any idea was going to be coming in either look. So I will talk about the voiceovers. I think there were some really interesting things in both sets of them, but I do feel kind of bad because we got less judges comments or less punny comments, which are one of my favorite parts of every episode. But I enjoyed them.
Yeah, I don't know. Can somebody tell me where the hell that came from? Because, Liana, I did not know that was coming. There are so many parts of this challenge. Again, so badly explained by the producers and RuPaul. We didn't understand the challenge. We didn't understand the soup can part of the challenge. And now, apparently, they have an entire story for both of their outfits on the runway that's going to play as an audio track as they're on the runway. And we won't get to hear the judges with any of their snarky commentary. Are you kidding me?
I was watching it, and then, you know, because Aja like goes up there first, I was like, oh no, you know, this is Princess Disaster flashbacks. Aja's having to give some sort of narrative. And so then I didn't listen to what she was saying because I was just confused that she was talking, and I was confused about the cans, and I'm still trying to sort all that stuff out. So yeah, no, I didn't know. Also, apparently it was a branding challenge, which I missed that as well. So.
Could you imagine if they took the same guy that did the weird computer graphics from the Fairy Princess Challenge and they had to give face and voices to their soup cans and they would put it like on a pedestal on the side and have to animate it next to them? That would be, I mean, that would be a new level of ridiculousness with this challenge.
Oh my God. Yeah, I forgot about that challenge. Wow. the one where they had the sidekick and they had to animate it next to them. That's so, oh, wow. I had forgotten that happened, and that was actually some good shit.
Oh my God, that's a fantastic idea, Mike. That's what it should have been. It should have been the outfit is soup can inspired, and then they have to make a soup can that talks or something.
And they're the soup can as well. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And they do the narration.
Beauty and the Beast realness. Let's make it happen. And talking inanimate objects. And yeah, that challenge is stuck in my head from season 9 just because I remember one Kimora Black's robotic, this is Funky Monkey, and poor Pheromone just looking down at the script the entire time, so we only saw the fishy eyelids and not just to describe her makeup. All right, let's go queen by queen here, and we'll try to, since it's literally just a soup can and a dress, we'll bunch them together here. Let's start with Aja, who took a bit of a swing with her candy-based soup, and she went for a look that apparently pulled from many different decades. For her disco queen couture. Liana, Aja was placed in the bottom 2 for this overall performance. Do you agree with the judges' decisions?
Well, so I actually really liked her soup can because I thought that it was something different. You know, oh, it's like a sweet soup thing. And, you know, it was, you know, it wasn't subtle, right? There was something subtle about sugar tits and like tastes like a good time. But I thought it was funny. And then turns out later when they actually did the critiques, it was that branding challenge. So I had missed that. And I mean, I thought I really liked her outfit. You know, I can't speak to the mishmash of time periods that it apparently conveyed. But I didn't think this was as bad as the judges made it seem.
Yeah, I'll disagree. I thought that the soup can was a total miss, and she obviously just wanted to call it sugar tits. I mean, let's be real. That's what was going on. She wanted to call it sugar tits, and she found a way. It's like when I was doing a speech back in the day, when I was on competitive speech and debate, and I had a great title for a speech, and I found a way to write a speech to work in the title. You know what I mean? I feel like that's what was happening with the soup can, okay?
When you started telling your story, I was wondering how you were going to link sugar tits with speech and debate. But I'm glad it was much more PG.
It's there, Mike. It's there. I'm telling you. Okay. So I thought that was terrible. It was a swing and a miss. And not only that, I agree with everybody, and I'm not trying to be overly picky with Aja, but sweet is not what we know her. She's not sweet, and she knows that. She's fierce. She's, you know, girl, I'm sickening. I mean, that's her. She's nothing to do with sweet. Ben could be sweet, maybe even Trixie a little bit, but not Aja. That was just such a total fail, total misrepresentation of what she's really about. Beyond that, this is the thing. I don't think that they would have really, I think she may have been able to avoid the bottom two if she kept her mouth shut. But once she started opening up her mouth about, well, I was inspired by this from this era. Oh, that's wrong. Oh, that who? Oh, is that how you say that? Oh, well. Oh, gosh, I don't know. Oh, the 70s? I thought this one. Oh, I love the 70s. Oh, this is from the 60s. Oh, you know, I mean, like after that, I was like, okay, girl, RuPaul's going to find a way to send you home because she doesn't like dumb queens. RuPaul doesn't like dumb queens. RuPaul likes queens that have a sense of history, that understand where they come from. And it's apparent to me that Aja at 23 years old just doesn't have that yet. Has she improved beyond leaps and bounds over last season? Yes, she has. But yet she still has a long way to go. And I think that was so evident in this challenge. Again, I agree with the judges. This was a interesting look. It was actually very flattering to her. I like all the earth tones and the white, and then the beat was again, so on point. I always talk about her beat, but I think compared to so many people on the runway, she looks really great. But it's not disco. And that combined with the fact of her mishmash of references and lack of understanding of history of her look, combined with her total fail of a soup can, is what landed her in the bottom two.
Yeah, so a few things on that. First, when it comes to the soup can and the branding stuff like you were talking about before, Liana, I don't think it was actually vocalized. I did get a sense of it when they started coming up with their cans. And I think we did get, as Brent mentioned before, that sort of shade sound effect when maybe it was Trixie talking about, you know, oh, this is a challenge where you're supposed to be describing who you are and you're not sweet. I also wonder if it's a bit of suggestion theory and that Aja's like, no, I'm sweet. You should remember me as sweet. Don't remember me for the mean stuff I said. I'm totally sweet. I like the graphic design on it. We'll definitely talk about some questionable graphic design coming up very soon. But I really like the upside down cones. Like, this looked like kind of a perverted Ben and Jerry's can or pint. So I liked at least the design on it, but yeah, I don't know too much about actual 70s fashion, but I do understand where they were coming from with, you know, the hair was definitely from the 60s, definitely going for the Brigitte Bardot, which is, of course, from that different decade. And I agree with you, Brent. I feel like once Aja started, again, maybe this was the edit, but they definitely cut her saying, trying to describe and really supplement the decisions that she made. But the judges just really called her out on it. And I was on Aja's side a little bit at first. When I heard Rue and Michelle go in on her, I was like, okay, this is old person yells at cloud. You know, gosh darn millennials don't know anything about drag. But then I saw a bonus clip on logotv.com where Rue went to go visit Aja in the workroom. And Aja pretty much admitted there that she knew nothing about Andy Warhol. So I can understand to a certain extent why you might say France Jolie instead of Frances Jolie just because, I don't know, the words get mixed up in your head. God knows it does in mine. But that being said, I do feel like there is a certain amount of education that you need, especially when you know you're doing an Andy Warhol challenge, like study up a bit. And I feel like she unfortunately sort of failed on that part. Liana, what did you feel about the judges' criticisms overall, especially when it came to Rue sort of giving a grand announcement about how, you know, this is an example of why drag queens need to know pop culture?
Yeah, well, so I didn't know about that secret scene, but that, I mean, then that makes sense why Rue then on the runway went in on her like that, because, you know, like you mentioned before, that's something that Rue really appreciates is a queen that knows her history, because it was Violet, right? That even though she was a really young queen,
she knew
her history.
Yes.
So, you know, so I think that that's a perfect example of, I think Rue expects these young queens, even though Aja is still 23, to know their history.
Yes, Liana, we are soulmates, mama, because I was going to bring up Violet because as a perfect example of somebody who I feel like won over RuPaul, so specifically because of how learned and educated she was about drag culture and fashion in general. I really feel like that's a big part of the reason why Violet ended up winning that season and $100,000, because she knew where she comes from and she knew what, like, all of the outfits she pulled from. She could always tell you what they were inspired by, who did the design, what year it was out. I mean, she just knew everything, and that's what RuPaul just lives for.
And if you want an example as to how Brett Wolgamott and Liana Boris are soulmates, go listen to the Newly Host game, where they try to answer each other's questions with fantastic success, I'm sure. But the interesting thing, though, is that, I mean, Aja pulled Crystal LaBeija, not only the reference, but the mannerisms out, you know, the last episode. So do you think it's more selective knowledge? Do you think it was just because she wanted to do that for Snatch Game, she just watched the Queen documentary and sort of pulled from that?
Yeah, exactly. She watched the Queen documentary and she just was all into this character. And she was like, I could do the character. And at least she spelled the name right, so I'll give that to her. But I don't think that she knew much about anything that was going on. And I mean, she's 23. I know what I was like when I was 23. Like, come on. Like, I you know, I was an idiot. I was a zygote.
Her makeup, though, looked so good. So I have to imagine that all the time she could have been spent studying history, she was spending learning how to do her makeup, because she looked gorgeous.
Girl, it's called multitasking. Get a damn
audiobooks.
Yeah, maybe the Andy Warhol diaries. Let's actually talk about that for a second as well, because Liana, I know we talked a bit about the show, about, again, how confused you were by this concept when people just started talking when their mouths weren't moving on the, specifically when they came out on the white horse.
Well, okay. So first of all, I have done a Google search since this. And yes, I have learned about the Andy Warhol diaries. But I get the voiceover for the cans because it was like a promotional thing for the cans. But then the fact that there was this whole backstory that was unexplained for their second look, that was really what threw me for a loop. Or I guess, what was Shangela? The Hallaloops.
Hallaloop. It threw you for a Hallaloop. That's a great segue into our second person on the runway, Mike.
Let's talk about Shangela here, who, good God. So we have the Hallaloop, Shangie's Angie's caffeinated Hallaloops, doing a takeoff on, Miss Alyssa Edwards and her energy drink from last All-Stars season. And then we get to her disco couture look. Trixie called it the worst thing that she's seen on Drag Race. Brent, is that hyperbole coming from Trixie Mattel?
I think it's hyperbole. I don't think it's the worst thing I've ever seen on Drag Race. I thought it was sort of interesting, and I didn't know why there were discs in front of her that obviously looked like gold records. I think that's what she was obviously going for. I don't know what happened in the front, but on the other hand, you know what? She chose to design the outfit that way. We don't need to know what's going on. It's not like Project Runway where, you know, Heidi's like, can you take that off? We want to see what's underneath that. You know what I mean? Like, they don't have to do that here. So she was giving them all that she could. The thing I love about Shangela is that she took it with grace and style. When she was on the runway, she's the ultimate, like, never let them see you sweat queen. You know, she was, I'm going to do as good a job as I can. And the soup can, I thought, was really well done. First of all, Hallaloops sounds like something that would have been invented by now, okay? It sounds like something that should be eaten somewhere. And the fact that it's not, I think, like, speaks to how well Shangela did in this challenge, because she still made it seem like something that I thought, oh my God, I could actually buy that at the store. Obviously, she had some fun with it, with the whole Shangie's Angie's or whatever the hell she called it. But it was still a very, very fun time. I liked the branding of it. And it was, again, like the judges said, from a marketing perspective, from a branding perspective, totally in sync with Shangela, everything we know her for. Perfect. Done. Okay. If she could have just done a pretty good outfit for the runway, I feel like she would have been safe with Kennedy. But I obviously, there was something going on in the front that she, and you know what? She didn't tell them. They asked, they said, well, I don't really know what's going on in the front with all these records. And she's just smiling like, hallelujah.
I said like, oh, it doesn't matter. Let me just throw my catchphrase out there. I think, I'm pretty sure in season three, didn't she do the hallelujah hula hoop as well? So she is really putting that brand out there.
Yeah, but you know what? It works. I like it.
I think Hala Loops is the cereal that I ate at my like Bible camp or whatever. Okay, so I have a few points about Shangela. So first of all, her can, I liked it, but do you guys, what was that thing in the middle underneath where it said Hala Loops?
I believe it was a party horn from what I saw, because there's like confetti coming out of it, or maybe it was like a megaphone.
I thought it was an animal at first. I thought there was an eye and two little ears. So I was really confused by that, but that makes more sense. And then as far as her look goes, though, honestly, the only thing I could think was she is trying to hide whatever she is wearing. Like, she is just gluing this big old records and throwing on all the fringe. And then maybe she's so embarrassed, she's just going to stick one over her eye so they won't be able to see her. But yeah, I mean, she just has such natural charisma that even though this outfit is such a hot mess, she still does her best to try and sell it. So I will give her that, but
exactly. That's it. The natural charisma is just something you can't buy. You know, Bianca Del Rio is on her world tour right now. I'm trying to get my partner to go to it because she's coming to Columbus, Ohio, and she's coming to Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and in both places we're going to be in the near future. And I'm like, we need to find a way to do this. And that's something that Shangela has in spades. Just natural charisma, uniqueness, nerve, and talent, everything that RuPaul looks for in a winner of RuPaul's Drag Race, Shangela has. And I really feel like that's the reason why this is the thing. I never, ever doubted that she was going to be safe during this episode. I knew she's probably going to end up in the bottom two, but I knew she wasn't going to be eliminated because she's our narrator, and they have so many things set up with her, with the whole Game of Thrones references and the alliances and what she's built and all that. And I just knew that there was going to have to be some payoff later on down the line. So I never, ever worried about her. But having said that, I thought that she acquitted herself well in the moment. And I also thought she handled herself well after. We can talk about the deliberations.
Yeah. Well, Brent, I know that you said that Shangela never lets them see her sweat. Maybe they didn't allow her to see her sweat because she was wearing a big old dinner plate on her head. Nobody could see her damn face. This was, I mean, I'll go to the can first. I would say that it's almost the opposite of Aja for me, where...
I'm sorry.
Let me go to the can. Yeah. I'll be right back. Oh, God. Got to push out these hollow loops. But the thing is that, like, for me, the branding worked, like we were talking about. Like, she has a certain amount of energy to her. I liked her voiceover when she's talking about, like, after one bite, your friends will be saying, slow down, bitch. I feel like, graphically speaking, that can was ugly as crap. Just between, like, the purple with the fish along the bottom. Again, I'm not commenting too much on graphic design, but considering some of the other stuff that we got, it was a little like, ooh. But then that was actually a perfect segue into her outfit. It's just, again, I'm not one to judge fashion, but I mean, between the gold tinsel and... I could understand, like, covering yourself in gold records, but she just put, like, three of them like a snowman down her front and then just placed one over her head. It was so random, and it's totally right, Liana. It felt like she was trying to hide something, and who knows what it was. I know that she had a problem getting into the fabric, so maybe she just actually cut it and then got into it and, like, tried to tape it back together and threw some gold records on top of
it. You know
it,
what,
but...
Liana, Mike, there's a really missed opportunity here, honestly. What Shangela should have done was just totally ditch the fringe. She should have gone with the, I can't remember this girl's name. Her name was Lizzie something. She was the winner of the Academy Award for costume design for Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, when she came in that gold American Express card outfit, the dress that was made up of gold Amex cards. If Shangela just would have walked down the runway in gold records and somehow made a dress out of it, I think that could have worked. I think even if she had smaller ones and bigger ones, I don't know what she had to work with, but I feel like that would have worked maybe with like a little bit of gold underneath as like an undergarment, you know, to cover up any maybe spots that were seen to the public. But I feel like that would have been, that could have worked here.
Like, she didn't go far enough. Like, if you're going to stick gold records to yourself, stick them all over.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. It felt like she sort of just like half committed to the idea, and as a result, like you're talking about, it came off more like she was trying to obscure something rather than what Shangela usually does, which is like, if she makes a mistake, she is going to stick to that mistake and turn it into a success. And it feels like, unfortunately, she wasn't able to do that here. Bertha, unfortunately, seemed to get the best of her. I will say as well, I did like her diary. So I guess the concept of the Andy Warhol diary is that Andy Warhol just sort of wrote in his diary, they compiled his diaries and released them after his death. And they were just a lot of name dropping, because Andy Warhol obviously was a huge celebrity. And so I think the more funny voiceovers were the ones that got more ridiculous. Shangela's was more specific than maybe Trixie or Ben's, but I do like, you know, her reference to meeting with Tyra and Jay Alexander at lunch to shoot photos for Top Model Cycle 276, which is perfect corporate synergy, because I believe it was either last week or 2 weeks ago that a bunch of drag race alumni went onto Top Model to do a photo shoot with them.
Yes. I think Valentina was there. By the way, it was Lizzie Gardner and Tim Chappelle who were the winners of the Academy Award. I don't want anybody to come for me or Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. So there you
go. Okay, I also don't want anybody to come for me. I figured out what that horn thing on Shangela's can looks like. It looks like an aardvark. So.
It's an aardvark? Is that what you said?
Yeah, that's what I think it looks like. Don't come for me. Don't at me.
I don't even know how, like, my mascot is the aardvark. Daenerys rode in on an aardvark to take the Seven Kingdoms.
I don't know. That's what it looks like to me.
Well, perhaps that's one of the side effects of taking Pep Abysmal, which is Trixie Mattel's soup, coupled with her own pink tracksuit Studio 54 look. Brent, Trixie landed in the top two this episode, making up for her performance last episode. Do you agree with the judge's placement here?
Yeah, I do. Again, I feel like some of these challenges are just like we really need to find a way for Trixie to win. So could we do a design challenge? Because I think she's really good at sewing and knowing her body. But having said that, she did great. I really love the fact that she was able to work in her Trixiness into the outfit itself. And it still looked like something that Trixie would wear, but yet it was disco enough for me. And I thought that the makeup, again, very Trixie, very heavy, painting for the back row, I get it, or the check cashing place down the street. But I thought it was great. And she was, was it pants or was it a skirt or dress? Like, I couldn't tell what exactly that pink, the bottom she was wearing, because I thought it was pants at first, and then I'm like, well, maybe it's just a dress that goes all the way to the bottom. So,
no, they were bell bottoms. It was a jumpsuit.
They were bell bottoms. Okay, cool. Yeah, they looked. Yeah. It looked really fabulous. I love that. Yeah. Now the soup can, help me out here. I don't remember what the soup can was.
It was the picture of her with like satanic bright eyes and a flowery feel.
Oh yeah. Well, that one to me was all about the voiceover. I feel like obviously the soup can was very, very fun. I don't think anybody took it seriously as something that would be a soup. And that's the thing. Some of these queens had more of a idea for a real soup that was sort of tangentially related to something you could possibly eat. And some of them really made no effort whatsoever. And Trixie was like one of those people who made no effort whatsoever. She was just going to have fun with it and work in as many jokes as possible. And given the results of the runway, I would say that's the right call.
Okay, wait, I'm confused again. Was it supposed to be a real soup?
That's the thing. I don't know. I mean, look, again, make RuPaul laugh. She made RuPaul laugh.
Yeah.
Girl, bye.
I will say also the I learned this in my fabric picking classes, but the velvet that Trixie was working with, I mean, that's a tough fabric to sew and to craft with. So the fact, I think it was velvet, or at least that's what it looked like to me. So the fact that she was able to make, and I'm pretty sure it was a jumpsuit. It fit her body perfectly, yeah. Camel toe included. And I thought it was really gorgeous.
Yeah, that's insane when you think about it, considering we just had Shangela's look to compare, that she not only made an outfit that looked like it wasn't sewn that day, but was also form fitting to her body and her padding. Is just mm-hmm. pretty ridiculous. Trixie was far and above my favorite in this challenge. I don't want to, you know, mimic Titus too much, but I feel like she really killed it in every part of the challenge here. Starting with the soup can, I thought she had the best branding. Again, you know, schools out as to whether it was supposed to be a legitimately tasty soup or not, considering that Trixie was pretty much marketing like a prescription medicine and not necessarily a soup. But I loved, like, I know you were talking in previous weeks, Brent, about, like, is Trixie funny? This is her style of humor. It's, like, very dark, very clipped, a little edited together. So when you get this, her talking about how it's a non-refillable, prescription-filling, habit-forming, heart-slowing goodness. I'm inspired by rainbows, little birdies, and the reemerging dark recesses of a rocky childhood. I feel like that's very Trixie. And it segues into the runway where, again, her tracksuit, was it, like, disco queen, you know, beauty, like something you might find on BB? No, but she brought her POV into it, and I loved her voiceover as well. Again, the funnier that you get and more outrageous you get with the name dropping, much like, you know, the character of Tahani from The Good Place, the funnier it gets. So when she talks about how she had a dream where she went to Tiffany Amber Thiessen's fashion show, seated between Karen from Finance and John Wayne, and they went to dinner with Soleil Moon Frye, Betsy Johnson, and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Like, that's the type of humor that I feel like we were supposed to be going for in these diaries, that maybe some queens did it. So I was really happy with Trixie's performance this episode. I thought she was by far the top performer. And even though she lost the lip sync, hopefully this means that, you know, for her sake, she's on the way back up after really bottoming out last week.
Yeah, I was a little like, over the whole redemption thing, the queen or the judges were like, you know, I'm glad you finally woke up. I'm like, oh, so like you're giving her a pass for sucking for the past four episodes, I guess. And she still didn't win the lip sync this time. I'm like, okay, fine.
That's the Jean Robert low expectations. Don't okay. do a lot of work around camp.
The other thing, it's interesting though that you bring that up, Brent, because like, do they not remember two episodes ago when Trixie was not only on the top, but arguably could have been in the top two? They just completely forgot about that and only considered the Snatch Game performance.
Yeah, I know. It's definitely selective memory here, Mike.
All right.
That's your name, right?
Yes. Thank you. The bird is popping now. Let's move on to the back half of the Queens here. Speaking of back half, we're going to Kennedy's. Grandma Kennedy's potluck of juice, getting that booty tight in one bite. And then we have her disco look as well as her Andy Warhol-esque diary. Liana, how did you feel about Kennedy this week?
I actually liked her soup. I thought at least it was cohesive. Like she sort of had, you know, some sort of, it was Grandma Kennedy, which, you know, they critiqued her for having this sort of shtick. But I don't know. Maybe I was just, again, confused. I'll stick with my theme. But I liked it. I like the one bite will make your booty tight, spoon your way to a fat ass. I thought those were really funny. So I didn't think her soup can was as bad as the judges seemed to make it out to be. I will say I couldn't, as far as her Studio 54 look goes, I could not stop staring at that yellow thing
yes.
on her waist.
Yes.
It looked
like a wrestling belt.
I don't even know what it was. I was just completely distracted.
Yeah, I was definitely looking at it as well. Although it does add an interesting pop of color. Look, I'm going to talk about the Studio 54 outfit first. Mary, the shoes are everything. I'm just living for the thing about Kennedy Davenport is, Mama, she comes out with a woman's heel every flipping time. I don't care what she's doing. If she's dancing, if she's going to be dancing in a lip sync, you best be sure she's going to come out with an 8-inch heel on, girl, bye. It's awesome. I live for it. This outfit was great. And the hair, the makeup, everything was just so on point. I love the bare shoulders. I love the midriff. I mean, the yellow thing, the midriff thing that's going on there. And it just, it fit so well. And there was a little bit of glitter involved too. And she had like just enough jewelry with the earrings. And she had this sort of bracelet on, along with a little bit of gold in the shoes that I just thought was so well done. And then the judges for the soup can, they can go to hell. I thought the whole thing with the grandma was fine. Again, why are you commenting on how she looks during a challenge where she literally has a can over her entire body? Like, just stupid criticism that makes no sense whatsoever. It just seems to me like they were looking for something to pick at with her. And I thought she did an amazing job in this challenge. I would have had her in my top two, I have to tell you.
Interesting. I wouldn't put her in the top two, but I agree with you both in terms of the judges' critiques about the grandma point of view. Because, A, again, we weren't sure what the marketing was supposed to be. And, B, I feel like we've sort of figured out that Kennedy does best when she's playing a character. Right? She did really well as Little Richard in the Snatch Game. She did really well as that Bitchler character a few weeks ago. We can count out whatever Phaedra Parks was last week. But I feel like Kennedy is best when she's impersonating someone or playing a big character. And so I like that she sort of knew that and sort of went for that. And I think it definitely stuck out more than some of the other stuff that the queens were doing. So I have to admire that. Granted, if they were given the explicit instructions of you need to create a can that is about you as a drag queen, I would clock her more for that, but we didn't know if those were specifically the instructions. I also liked her her Andy Warhol diary about how she woke up at 1 p.m. and Michelle Obama was yelling at her because she was late for the Jet magazine photo shoot. And then at the photo shoot, Miranda Priestly kissed her hello. And then London's ambassador, who doesn't even have a name, gave her a bunch of $20 bills because she looked cheap. I thought that was not the most extreme amount of name dropping, but I thought that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. And it's just so tongue-in-cheek. Just make me laugh and have a good time, girl. That's all I need.
Well, let's move on to somebody who did place in the top two here. Miss Bebe Zaharra-Benet. Again, there was some trepidation as to what Bebe would put out, considering that she has not won a challenge yet. What she put out, she decided to stray away from Achu. Maybe she got some cold medicine. And now she is touting Zaza, a peanut soup from Cameroon. And she is going for the, I believe Ross called it a gay car wash look in the fringe that was going on with her disco queen couture. Liana, what did you think about Bebe here?
Well, definitely Zaza is an improvement on a name over Achu. So I guess when you start from Achu, I thought that that was a step up. I would agree with what Carson said, though, about the can, is that it would have been a really pretty print. But as far as the look goes for a can, you know, I don't get it. She's a mole. She's got to be a mole.
I like how
she just has to be.
On the pit stop this week was Gia Gunn with Alaska, and Gia said she was turned off of BB's can because she thought it was very satanic and dark.
Yeah, I'm glad you basically share my criticisms of this look, Liana, because I did not like the soup can and I did not like the runway outfit. I thought that both of them were just subpar. As far as the soup can goes, again, it was something that was taken a little bit literally, like, okay, peanut soup, okay, fine. But is that funny? Were you funny? Did you present it in a funny way? No, it just sort of was peanut soup, and you put a name on it that sounded African, like Zaza, and you put the continent of Africa, and you put Cameroon, which, you know, I don't know why Shangela with Hallelujah, and I don't know why Shangela with Hallelujah doesn't bother me, but yet Bebe Zaharra-Benet with Cameroon does bother me. Maybe it's because I haven't seen Bebe put out enough great product yet where I'm like comfortable like allowing her to be that ridiculous every time. You know,
it's because Shangela has done other characters and other things that are not Hallelujah based.
Yes, yes. That's certainly it. Again, I think that she's the mole. I was just incredulous when the judges were giving her all this fabulous criticism. This, you know, wonderful constructive criticism. Like, you know, we really love your look. You know, we think it looks great. Like, you did great on the runway. I was like, are we looking at the same thing? Because it looks like it's not very disco to me. I'm looking at Ben De La. Look, I'm looking enough at all six of them right now. I'm looking at De La, I'm looking at Kennedy, and I'm looking at BB. Which of these things does not belong? Okay? It's not disco. She looks, to quote Dorothy Zbornak, she looks like the mother of a solid gold dancer. Okay? That's what she looks like. It does not look like disco to me, and I'm going to stand by that.
Is Shangela that solid gold dancer?
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm calling it BB.
I mean, I think this is just representative of the fact that I think BB has a very strong point of view, but it's a little down one lane.
A little rigid. It's too rigid for me, especially when the point of her coming on RuPaul's Drag Race, let's just assume for the sake of argument that she is the mole. The point of coming on was to try different things and get your brand out there more. And get, you know, people to like you. I guess you can say, well, you're getting your brand out there by putting Cameroon and saying that all the time, talking about Africa. Everything has been in that lane, okay? I've seen nothing. I've seen anything that does not at least touch that part of the world. And I just want to see something beyond what she's giving me right now. Because this is the thing. It's not that point of view is not valid. It certainly is. It's that I think she's being safe. I think she's being safe and comfortable where she likes to live. And I want her to venture outside and learn how to color outside the lines a little bit.
It's narrow-minded because she lives in a molehole. Molehole? Is that a thing? Molehole?
That molehole. Oh, boy. Check. Please get your moleholes checked, people. It's a very serious incident. Yeah. The interesting thing about that, Brent, is I do agree. I think that she has this POV of just being very regal. You incorporate the African stuff in there somewhere, but, you know, you look at the challenges. First challenge, she did an African dance. Second challenge, she was Diana Ross, which is essentially, like, what she did in the lip sync as well, which is essentially, she does a great Diana Ross, but that's really, like, that really is who BB sort of represents as, like, a personality in general. Third challenge, she was an African princess. Fourth challenge, I feel like she did step out behind those lines, like you talked about. We saw a little bit in that Grace Jones. So that's sort of what you might be hinting towards. Because I agree. I feel like, I wouldn't say it was necessarily her thinking that it's safe, but I think it's just her feeling like she's comfortable doing this. And so when you're given these really odd situations to navigate, she's like, okay, let me go back to the well and do this. And so you get this long, elegant dress out of her that I would agree. You know, it wasn't necessarily 70s disco to me. You know, it was more so like a dress that someone like Diana Ross would wear at the Grammys, more so than something they would bring into Studio 54. So, yeah, I agree as well that I don't necessarily see this in the top two. I actually really did like the graphic for the can. I thought it was very understated. And again, I don't know how much input the queens have to the actual design, but I really like the colors behind it. Yeah, I thought it makes you want to say Cameroon at the bottom, like, just show that it was a very simple idea. Like, compare that with somebody like Trixie, who packed all of these words into it and packed a lot of comedy into it. And I would also say that if we're going again to comedy, her diary was probably my least favorite. She only mentioned, like, oh, yeah, I went to Diana Ross's party at the Moulin Rouge and I pepper sprayed the paparazzi. Like, that wasn't really what they were going for. But, I mean, it was the judge's decision, not ours. I was very surprised.
She's a mole.
I was very surprised that before the commercial, we get, you know, the cut of Michelle Visage being like, I have no negatives, which is a big deal. I was very surprised that it was BB who got those comments, to be honest.
Oh, my God. That's where I was like, okay, she's the mole. She is the mole, because there's no way Michelle Visage could look at that soup can and look at that outfit and say, you know what? I just don't have any criticisms. You look perfect. No way! That does not happen on RuPaul's Drag Race.
Okay, I may have started joking about her at the beginning of the season being the mole, but every single episode, I am getting more and more evidence that she is truly the mole. And this episode, just like Brent said, did me in. I am convinced.
I'm waiting for the words to come across the screen and for there to be a secret message in there that BB is the mole. Like, you know, like how on the mole they would give you clues during the episode? Like, I'm waiting for something to happen.
I can't wait. We have to call Corbin Burnson to really dissect that. I hope that they do an episode after the reunion where Anderson Cooper comes out and, like, tells us about all the clues that we missed to reveal that BB is the mole. Let's move on to our last queen here. Let's round things out with Ben de la Creme's soup can, the Cream de la Creme, and her look in the Disco Queen Couture. We mentioned this before. I wouldn't say this was going to put her in the bottom two, but she gets some comments from the judges about how, you know, this was okay, but we expected more. Liana, do you agree with the judges here?
Well, that sucks, right? I mean, I can understand where they're coming from, but then, you know, you're grading her on a curve. And I could have seen her easily squeak, or well, maybe not easily, but definitely squeaking in to the top two. I thought that her soup can was, I thought it was really funny. I loved the callback to, you know, winner of literally in everything.
Yeah.
And now extra humble at the bottom, I thought was absolutely hilarious.
Yes.
And you know, for somebody who doesn't sew, she puts together an outfit that I really enjoyed. And I thought her voiceover for the diary was hilarious.
Oh, so
maybe
good.
It was just the baby Jessica and the well reference, the party at the bottom of the well. Oh my gosh. And Stevie Wonder said she looks like Michelle Visage. That made me actually laugh out loud. The Taco Bell dog. I mean, I was impressed by her. I really enjoyed her her performance on the runway.
I mean, I guess everything's always sort of judged on a curve on RuPaul's Drag Race. They're always comparing you against your best self. And so is it a little bit unfair? I guess. But on the other hand, I feel like we were judging Chi-Chi on a curve the entire flipping time that she was on her first season. And, you know, giving her passes on things that we were like, well, you know, she'll learn that eventually. You know, so I feel like it's not unexpected that they are grading her on a curve. Having said that, I thought she did it amazing. Again, for somebody who doesn't sew, this outfit was literally glued to her body. I think it was literally glued to her body. I thought that it was a very Disco Studio 54 kind of outfit. The headpiece, the wig, and just the shoes with the platform heels. I just really, really like it. It's so hard for me because I think that all three of them, Kennedy and Ben and Trixie, did a really great job. It's close. I would probably have Ben in the top two with Trixie at this point. I know I said I would put Kennedy, but having reevaluated it, I think that I would have Ben in the top two with Trixie, mainly because the soup can I thought was so on point, on brand. Yeah. The little jokes in there about, you know, extra humble and all, but they just had me rolling. And it was something where I thought, you know what? It was so on point as far as her brand goes with the, you know, creme de la creme or whatever the hell it's called. And I thought she did a wonderful job. So I don't know why this is to be. Why I don't understand why she's disappointed. You know, you were in the top again. You're in the top. So and you very well could have been in the top too. It was very close. Who cares? But I don't know. She seems to really be bugged by it.
Well, I wonder if it's a thing where she feels a lot of pressure on her now to deliver each and every time, because that's what the judges kept telling her. It's like, you know, if you join a baseball team and the first four games you hit a home run each and every time, then the fifth one you try to go for a double, you'd have to imagine that at least some sports analyst will start saying like, oh, okay, that's a little strange. Are you already on a downswing? And I mean, I think Ben is also very paranoid, like we talked about before, about what happens if she falls into that bottom. And maybe she starts feeling like, oh God, if they don't like me now, this means I might soon be on the way out, because it might be an opportunity where as soon as I fall into that bottom, a queen's going to take an opportunity to get me out. But I agree that she shouldn't be disappointed here, because I really loved all of this as well. Not to, you know, piggyback off too much of what you guys were saying, but, you know, I loved both the POV, the graphics, and the voiceover of the soup can, especially her saying that it's an award-winning combination of talent, desperation, and dumb luck. Like, it's very, it walks this weird line of like braggadocious but humble at the same time. I was very nervous at first with her doing the winner of literally everything, because this can challenge reminded me a bit of the season 4 boat challenge. And if we remember, that was where Mulan like called it the SS Mulan and got a lot of criticism for it. while Willem literally stuck a million 8x10s of herself along the boat and won the challenge. I have no idea how that happened. But it's that idea of like, I thought initially they were going to be like, oh, you made this weird sort of mixed message about how you won everything and we're sort of bragging about it. But I feel like she made it work. And I totally agree with you, Liana. The voiceover for the Andy Warhol Diaries was fantastic. That's what I want. That's what I was speaking about before. Just like going completely over the top by name dropping the Taco Bell Chihuahua Baby Jessica and Stevie Wonder. Like, those are such random name drops that they really worked for me. I mean, I can only imagine what would have happened if they ended up putting her in the top again and making her 5 for 5. That would be a little ridiculous. So, of course, I probably said that last week with 4 for 4. But I would say she was comfortably, you know, getting the bronze here. All right. Let's move on to deliberation here, as BB and Trixie are the tops. They each won a 2-night escape for 2 at the W Hotel in Fort Lauderdale. And Shangela and Aja are at the bottom. And we get 2 very different reactions here. Shangela, in particular, she feels okay because she says, you know, I hope my resume speaks for itself. This was a momentary slip up. Aja is freaking out. Especially yeah. when she goes to BB, and BB's essentially already giving her a goodbye, it seems like.
Yeah.
So, like, she was just trying to give her pitch, and BB's saying, like, I love you. You're going to do fantastic things here on the outside. Brent, do you feel like, or do you think Aja's breakdown here is justified considering what's going on?
I mean, is it justified? I mean, it's her emotions, so I guess they're valid. The problem is that she was in the bottom two with somebody who was an absolute star, and unfortunately for her, these queens are not eliminating each other based on who they are threatened by. I mean, this is the equivalent of taking Dr. Will to the final four in Big Brother All-Stars. I mean, you know, why are you letting Shangela proceed here? Why not keep the weaker competitor in Aja? But that's not how they're doing things here. They are looking at past performances, and they're trying to be as fair as possible. And I just think that Aja knew that the writing was on the wall. There was no way she could save herself. She couldn't lip sync to save herself. She had to depend on one of these two people to save herself. And Trixie just got saved by Shangela last week, so she's not going to do it. And then you got BB, who won't even let her get in a word edgewise. So after that happens, then she really starts panicking, like, oh, shit, my time here is coming to an end. I don't want to be seen as a failure. I feel like I've been doing a good job. And you know what? She can't appreciate, because she's living in the moment, she cannot appreciate how she has won over fans like me. And that's what I think she is now able to appreciate. On her. And I know that there's a possibility that she might come back with the whole handmaiden thing that's happening at the end of the episode. But for the time being, she's unable to see that, and that's why she's panicking, and I get it. Having said that, she's done such a remarkable job, and I've just been so pleased by her. And but it's got to be, she's got to feel like a little cornered bear or something when she knows that the end is coming and there's no possible way to save yourself. It's sort of like somebody on Survivor who knows that it's going to be 9-1 against them, and somebody else already has the hidden immunity idol. There's no way out, you know, and nothing you can do about that.
I love the Shangela Dr. Will comparison, because now I can imagine that Shangela will call her alliance Hallelujah Town, and I can't wait for the merchandising to come out after that.
I mean, I have to imagine if you're any queen in this situation who goes up against either Shangela or Ben de la Creme, I mean, unless there's a queen who is going to be willing to take that shot and get out one of the strong competitors, you know, but Ben de la Creme's math, you know, is pervasive and everybody got a hold of it. You know, of course, like, Shangela's going to stay and Aja's going to go home, you know, even though Aja has been, she's been safer. High. Did she get high in any of the?
She lip synced in the first challenge. She finished in the top 2 there.
Yes,
and then,
yes,
and then she was That's in right. the bottom during the Bachelor challenge.
Oh,
barely,
right, yes,
though.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and that's the thing, is I co-sign with Brent. The fact that she has shown how much she has improved, and this whole idea of her sort of playing on borrowed time, I think has been really good for her, because she's just been fun. And it was really sad to see her break down. But in the moment, I totally understand being up against Shangela. I mean, you have to know that you are probably going home. So, and that must suck, especially with, oh my God, BB was so, maybe this is because I've been watching too much Big Brother, but I was like, this is not good. BB, this is not good. You have to at least pretend, like, oh, I don't know, I'll consider it. I don't know. But
What stage in Big Brother would we compare this to? Is this like the Wednesday people are starting to go around and try to get people on their side, hopefully before the Thursday vote?
No, this is the Ross is talking to a potential jury member and doesn't know how to interact with them. And then Brent gets tons of hate mail from Ross's team and Ross's boyfriend on Instagram and Twitter. That's what this is like.
I wonder if there's some crossover. I wonder if they're listening to this podcast as well.
I'm sure they are. Fuck all y'all. Go to hell.
That's what your soup is called.
Yeah, I know, yeah, right?
Oh, boy. The other interesting thing from this is you talked about, you know, Trixie and Shangela, reversal of fortune here, where Trixie is out now on the top and Shangela's on the bottom. We got a little bit of intrigue as to whether Trixie would take this opportunity to eliminate Shangela. She says that, like, if Shangela was in my shoes, she might actually do it this time. We'll find out next week who Trixie eliminated. Liana, any chance you think that she would have eliminated Shangela here?
Oh, God, I hope so. I want it so badly. Nah. I can't even think rationally. Nah. Oh, please don't ruin this fantasy for me. Ugh. Take out the queen of the dragons. God, it would just be so beautiful. And then I think it completely fits into my mole theory with, you know, BB and then keeping Shangela because Rue loves Shangela. In my conspiracy theory rattled brain, it all makes sense.
And then she rides off on an aardvark into the sunset. It all works out.
I know, right? The thing was that with our theory about the mole, we were convinced that BB was always going to be safe and never in the bottom, never in the top two. You know, she was in the top one challenge a couple of weeks ago, but she was not in the top two. But all of a sudden, when she was in the top two this week, then I was like, okay, well, what if she wins? So he's like, or what if Trixie falls down or doesn't do very well, and by default, BB wins? Having said that, let me just say, even though I would not have had BB in the top here, in fact, I would have had her number four on a scale of 1 to 6. She killed the lip sync, so I know I can talk about the deliberations and the fact that, you know, Asha's having a breakdown, and Shangela, I thought, did a very good job. He said, you know what, I love you as a sister. You're gonna make whatever decision you make, and I'm going to respect it. She handled herself like such a flippin' professional. I thought that was really well done, and I was pleased to see. I was pleased to see both of them. I didn't even mind that Asha was freaking out or that she was crying because it showed me how badly she wanted it. She's having such a great time, and she's improved so much. She does not want to go home.
I just want to point out that the lip sync song was a Diana Ross song.
Yeah.
So
I was going to say, like, this has made some people scream a little rigor mortis because it just so happens the one time that BB's in a lip sync, it ends up being a Diana Ross song. Now, that being said, segueing into the lip sync, I also think that she won, but I think she also had a massive advantage over Trixie, not just because of the style of song. I love me some Trixie Mattel, but Trixie Mattel is not the best lip syncer, I have to admit. Right now,
have you heard? She lost the pearl.
She's 0-3 in lip syncs right now. Because remember, she lost out on that second time too. Actually, it might have been to Kennedy. I'm trying to remember in season 7.
I don't know. I was trying to think, and I'm like, I don't have an answer. Sorry.
It was a lip sync with Ginger. Right, it was the dance challenge. I'm remembering that now.
Yeah, I knew it was the dance challenge because she came off set with both halves of her face.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that Trixie, you know, I think Trixie did her best in Trixieing it up, you know, between the tearaway and like the interesting like kicking that she was doing. I loved her little like pink hoedown outfit. That feels very on brand for Trixie Mattel, but it felt like, you know, BB definitely had this one in the bag, so long as she did not make a massive mistake. And from what I can tell, she did not. Do you agree with Liana?
It's a conspiracy. Yeah, well, I mean, yes, I think that she absolutely deserved to win. You know, the standing in the one place commanding the room strategy, I think, works really well for this style of song. It works really well for her, you know, bouncing around, jumping all around stage. Like, that's not going to translate well. So I will say that, you know, BB did a really great job with that. But I can't get over the conspiracy theory. The hair bounce, I don't know. It's all rattling around in my brain. I feel like, what's that meme where it's from The Hangover with all the like numbers, yeah, and it's like counting car. You know what I'm talking about?
That's pretty much a simulation of Benja LeCreme trying to figure out who to eliminate as well.
Yeah, that's me right now.
So BB wins and sends Asha home tearfully. Aja, you mentioned this before, Brent, and this is sort of something that people have definitely come for BB for a myriad of reasons after this episode. Some feel like Aja should not have been the one to go home, especially because we got this moment on the runway that we kind of skipped over where Michelle asks, Phoebe, this is a lovely dress. Did you make this all your own? And she said, yup. And apparently, according to interviews with Aja, that was not, nothing was cut out. Phoebe did not say anything about Aja's involvement in helping her sew that outfit. Brent, do you think that's fair play?
Yeah, I think it's fair play. And I don't necessarily think that Phoebe even realizes that maybe she might have told a half-truth there. I mean, I'm sure that Phoebe conceived of the outfit and wanted it done a certain way. In fact, I remember watching the episode and her saying, okay, this is what I want to do and this is how I want to do it. And Aja had some suggestions for that. But I'm sure in Bibi's mind, it was all her. I mean, I think that Aja was just a tool for her to achieve her vision. And I feel like that that's why she feels like that she made the outfit. When they said, did you make this outfit? Yeah, I did.
Just like Bertha. Bertha doesn't get any credit as the sewing machine. Just a tool.
Just a tool. Yeah.
Just a tool. So Aja gets eliminated here, but maybe not for long. The Handmaid's Tale foreshadowing that they've seen throughout these five episodes has finally apparently come to fruition. Out come the Handmaids onto the runway with three quote-unquote captured queens. Let's do a little bit of speculation here. I am fairly sure.
Speculation? That... Okay, Mike. I'll pretend like I don't know which of the three these people are.
Oh, no. We know it's Morgan, Aja, and Chi-Chi. Let's be honest.
Okay. Yeah.
No. You could tell it was Chi-Chi. B, the tattoos gave away Aja. And C, you know the way that Thorgy and Milk went out of that competition. They would no way in hell want to even take a chance at coming back into the game.
I thought you were going to say, well, you know, Morgan's man hands, you can definitely see those.
So we have these three captured queens coming out. Liana, can you think about how they might be involved? Do you think this is going to be like an All-Stars 2-esque? They're going to compete alongside the queens and whoever wins comes back. Do you think they might vote to eliminate a queen? Do you have any ideas as to how they're going to get involved here in this next episode?
Yeah, well, I was trying to put it together from the promos also for next week, because if there was some sort of girl group number, it seemed like it was the final five queens all performing together. So I don't know if, you know, I'm going to be auditioning other queens, is what Rue said. So does that mean that they're going to perform separately, but they're also going to audition for their spot back? I feel like it's going to be something separate from the other competition of the five. But that, I mean, that's the only thing I can sort of piece together from what I've seen.
Well, the only thing that I have heard is that the queens that have been eliminated, and also Trixie in an interview that she gave, said that the twist is shocking. And I don't believe that it's going to be like it was last season. In fact, I think Trix even said that some people may not really like it very much, but some people may be gagged by it. I mean, like they're saying that they were absolutely gagged by it. So whatever it is, it's pretty freaking amazing insofar as reality TV twists go. And I don't know what's in store for them, but I'm very excited to find out. I'm also glad we're done with this stupid, you know, hey, kid girl, I got your back, you know, at the end of every episode, because I'm like, it's just tired by now. You know, like, I think it went one episode too long. I don't know if they were waiting for Aja to get there or what, but yeah, I was over it.
Well, just in case Aja doesn't come back, let's center off a bit here. Is it safe to say, is it hyperbolic to say that Aja has the most improved reputation from her first season to All-Stars of any queens this season, Liana?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is recency bias from seeing her, you know, just one season ago, but I think the dramatic improvement that she's made in such a short time span is, I mean, it's just breathtaking. And again, maybe it's just low expectations. I don't know. But I thought even in this episode when she went home, I thought she looked gorgeous.
Yes.
So, I mean, the contrast between this and I just can't help but think of the Princess Disaster look as like her lowest. You know, she said, right, that's the ugliest she's ever felt. Ugh, she just is so pretty.
So pretty. I mean, Mike, it's not even there's nobody else even in the conversation of most improved. Everyone else is basically who I remember them to be from their first time on Drag Race. Maybe a little bit more polished. I think Shangela is improved and definitely is a little bit more of a professional now. But in terms of the beat, in terms of the look, in terms of attitude, and just a, you know, obviously she, you know, boiled down to tears this episode, but before this has been really, really fun and very, very game for, you know what, I'm just going to enjoy my time here. I think that as time wore on, you know, getting to the fifth episode and feeling really good about yourself, because she did look gorgeous. You know, she's thinking to herself, you know what, maybe I could actually make the finals. You know, I don't know if she ever thought she could win, but I think she thought that she could make the finals. And how proud would she be that she showed all the naysayers how good she is? And I feel like that that's what she felt like was slipping away here at the end when she started crying and breaking down. But she really won me over. I was not a fan of Aja the first time around. I was not a fan of her coming back. I was like, why do we need to see her? We just saw her. What could she have possibly learned? And of course, she makes me look like an idiot again, because she is just fan-freaking-tastic. I am so pleased that she took the time and listened to the criticism about how her makeup looks on television, on HD. It just is, it is a night and day difference. And that is not over, that is not hyperbole on my part. That is the, that's the reality. I'm looking at what she looked like before. She looked like a mess. And whatever makeup she was using made her skin, that admittedly was having problems at the time, look even worse than what it did. And now she just looks like a goddess, and I'm living for her on the show and on Instagram.
Yeah, it's an interesting sort of arc between her two seasons, because I feel like she has the talent level now that meets the confidence she had when she walked into season 9, if that makes sense. She really walked into season 9 like thinking that her shit when she went to the can didn't stink. And then she had an immediate fall from grace, bottoming out at that moment you mentioned before in episode 3. And that was sort of a moment where she realized, oh, crap, I'm writing checks verbally that my ass cannot cash. And she tried to make some improvements, but then she got eliminated, you know, in 9th place. And here she comes back. And between that, as you mentioned, Brent, she talks about this on What You Pack in this week, how she decided to use less stuff that added texture to the face. She decided to soften the face a bit more because she realized that really where she hits home runs are with her styling, and she wants to bring more attention to that instead of what's going on in the face. So she comes back almost a completely different queen in All Stars 3. And it was so much fun to watch. I feel like she was so much fun from a confessional perspective as well, which I didn't really remember her doing a lot of in season 9. So I'm happy to see that. I'm hopeful that she's become, even though she had that moment of weakness in this past episode, I hope she now is much more confident in herself as a queen, because I think that we now realize that she is very, very talented. And so I'm very happy that they took a chance on her. I'm glad they went with this sort of like second chances theme for All Stars 3, if only to see someone really become, you know, an all-star worthy candidate over the course of 5 episodes. And a possible group of queens that might become all-stars in their time as well. We found out that the season 10 queens have all been released, barring yet another returning contestant, even though they already released Eureka's name. They had, I believe, a Meet the Queens special after the airing of the episode proper on Thursday. Just a heads up for you all out there, we're going to take a little bit of a pause button on that one. Between, you know, it airing a little bit later and the fact that I am swimming in a lot of reality TV exit interview content at the moment, what with the CBS reality hurricane that is blowing through the country right now, I think it'd be easier if we just saved to do it the week before. So around, you know, the week before the premiere, the week of the 15th or so, we'll be doing our preview of the new queens competing on season 10 when that premieres March 22nd. But I don't know, general thoughts, Liana, I know you said you were watching the Meet the Queens videos before we recorded. Any overall thoughts about the queens before we get into the granular aspects of it a few weeks from now?
I mean, they look really good. And it's sort of one of those things where, you know, I don't know if this is like a grass is greener on the other side, or like there's a new shiny object and I want to go play with that object instead of the one that I have. So there's a little bit of excitement and anticipation for that. I mean, Eureka is going to be back. There are some queens that I think are really going to shine. So it's, I don't want to be too hyperbolic and be excited, but it looks good.
I think it's definitely a new shiny object, but they're going to be messy, and I'm here for that. I like some messy queens, and I like getting to know them, and I like seeing people who I did not expect to win rise to the top. I mean, there are definitely instances in Drag Race history with Sharon. Of course, I know she ended up winning the first challenge, but coming into that season, I did not have Sharon anywhere on my map of people that could win that season. Jinx Monsoon, Violet Chachki, these are people, and even I would say Sasha Velour, people who won RuPaul's Drag Race, who I did not think were going to win RuPaul's Drag Race. You know, Bianca Del Rio, Bob the Drag Queen, you knew they were going to win from the time they even came on the show, girl. But these other people, not so much. So I'm very curious to see whether or not this is a coronation for Eureka, or, which I think it could be, and I'm here for that, or whether or not one of these other queens has enough talent to beat her. Because in order to beat Eureka on this season, you're going to have to get lucky, or you're going to have to be really, really, really flipping good. And I'm excited for either one. So let's have it.
What was it that was on Dayla's can? Desperation, luck, and talent, or whatever?
Yeah. Desperation, talent, and dumb luck. That's the new C-U-N-T. And Brent, I think you just unlocked an unintentional pattern here. I guess starting in season 5, all the odd season numbers have unexpected winners, and all the even season numbers are coronation edits. So,
so we can just crown the bitch now. Eureka, you win $100,000.
It's not going to fit over her bread loaf.
Yeah, it's like the Star Trek movies in terms of reputations every other
which
film.
One?
Oh my God.
Well, we'll be talking more about Star Trek and bread loaves, and I'm sure everything insane that's going to happen next week with episode 6 as we go into the girl group and we see what happens with this Handmaid's twist. For now, you can follow all of us on social media. We can go around the horn and talk up what we're doing in the Rob Has a Podcast atmosphere. Brent, let's start with you.
You can contact me at OneLuckyGay on Twitter and all platforms. And by the way, if you want to complain to me about my coverage of Big Brother, come to me on Twitter. Don't go to my Instagram where my family is, you bitches. Like, just have a little tact. Can you do that? Okay. Just saying. Team Ross out there, have a little tact. Anyway, girl, my, moving on. OneLuckyGay, one spelled out, and obviously covering Big Brother, Celebrity Big Brother's ending tomorrow, probably the day of that this podcast is released, that you'll hear me on RuPaul's Drag Race. I'm sorry, on Celebrity Big Brother with Rob and Taryn and Melissa. It's been a really fun season, and I'm excited to see who wins that. And then right after that, man, Big Brother Canada's coming. Liana, I'm excited.
I'm excited, too. Also, there's a rumor Ricardo Montalban is actually going to be on season 10
of my
RuPaul's
God.
Drag Race. yeah, so you can find me on social media. I'm at Liana Boras, LianaBoraas. I'm still doing the live updates on Saturday, which will continue for Big Brother Canada, which, like Brent said, is right around the corner. And then, Mike, you and I have the B&B, Survivor B&B, coming up. We're actually recording a season preview podcast in the near future. So look for that in your feed. It's the Survivor season is also going to be a ton of fun. It's a lot. There's a lot of reality TV right now.
I know. We're
I know, right?
We're going to be covering Survivor, Drag Race, and you guys are going to be covering Big Brother Canada all at the same time. It's going to be a fun spring. I've got spring fever. I'm excited for it. You can follow me at a Mike Bloom type. Liana just talked about the B&B, which should be there weekly in your feeds on reality TV wrap ups. I also do exit press for a bunch of different shows. Top Chef, I just did interviews with all four teams of The Amazing Race. I'm going to be interviewing all the celebrities left of the Celebrity Big Brother house, as well as my weekly exit press with Survivor as well. So be sure to check all that out. Thank you so, so much for listening. I hope you all had a nice hearty can of soup as you listen to this podcast. Brent, Liana, thank you as always for your fantastic work. We will talk next week, but for now, sashay away. Bye!